ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया। We're reading today from Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Chapter 18, Text 48. Chapter 18 is called The Perfection of Renunciation. It's the final chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So I will be reading from the word for word. It's underneath. Well, first you have the. It's called the Devanagari. That's the so-called Sanskrit. And then you have the Roman transliteration, and underneath is the word for word. So I'm reading from that. It's a little bit different than the Roman transliteration. So please pay attention. So if you like, you can repeat. Sahayam. Karma. Kaunteya sadosham api na chayet sarva arambaha hi doshena dhumena agni iva avrita sahayam karma kaunteya Sadhosham apinachayet Sarvarambahi doshena Dumenak nirivavrita Sahayam karma kaunteya Sadhosham apinachayet Sarvarambahi doshena Dume nakni rivavrita Sayang karma kaunteya Sadosham apinachayet Sarvarambahi doshena Dume nakni rivavrita Sahayam karma kaunteya Sadosham apinachayet Sarvarambahi doshena Dumenagni rivavrita. Would you like to try? Sahayam karma kaunteya Sadosham apinachayet Sarvarambahi doshena Dumena nakni rivavrita No? Okay, maybe next time. Thank you. Oh. Oh, yesterday. Oh, I wasn't here. I was in the Rath Yatra. Okay, we can do the next one then. So I will chant that one also, because it's nice to chant these mantras. Actually, the previous verse is a very important verse. I'll just speak on it briefly, because I already did the Sanskrit. Sadosham apinachayet. Dosha means fault. So Krishna sahayam. He's saying, every endeavor is covered by some fault. Sarvarambai doshena dumein agnir ivavrita. Agnir means fire. Just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work. Chayet means to give up. Na chayet. One should not give up his work, not renounce his sahajam, that work that is born of his nature. O son of Kunti, that is Arjuna. Even if such work is full of fault. So sarva ramba hidoshana. Sarva means all. Aramba. Even though it's full of faults, still, if it's our work that comes from our nature, then we should not give it up. Every work has some fault. Like you put a fire, then there is smoke. So the smoke is not very pleasurable. Like, I don't know if you ever light a fire, but if there's too much smoke, everybody complains. They say, no, you have to do it like this and more fire, and then the smoke will go away. But smoke will be there. So whatever work we do, there will be some fault. Some people, they say, you have to renounce all work. First of all, it's not possible, because you can. First of all, you don't really owe anything. If you think about it, you do not owe anything, really. This body, actually, it's been given to you by your parents. You're just using it. If the body stops, the heart stops beating, then the soul has to go somewhere else. It's not really yours. So much money you might have, you say, this is my money. It's not really your money. Actually, everything, all the money, your body, belongs to God, belongs to Krishna. So there's nothing to renounce, and there's nothing to gain. But what we can do is we can serve God. So all work actually should be done for God. And even though some work might have some fault, still it should be done. This is actually the essence of Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna is complaining that I have to kill my family. So he's complaining about his duty, that war is already there. You can see on that picture, the armies are already gathered. It's a whole big story, but Krishna and Arjuna, everybody, they did everything to stop the war. Sometimes people think, like, why is Krishna asking Arjuna to fight? But everything had been done to stop the fight. And now it was already too late. So many things had happened. It was too late. The fight was going to go on with or without Arjuna. So Krishna was saying, you have to do your duty. And yes, there will be some faults. Might be some fault, actually, because actually there was no fault on Arjuna's side. But he's saying, even though there might be some fault, still you should do your job. And you could say, actually, that there was some fault because his brother felt very bad after the war, and he did his whole big yajna to atone for the so-called sinful actions. Because, you know, killing is never a very good business. But sometimes it needs to be done. Like somebody attacks your wife or your child, you must retaliate. Otherwise, people will think you are crazy. That is actually your job as a father, to protect your loved ones. This is every law, every country knows this. That the father has to protect his wife and his children. Like that, if he doesn't do it, he actually is guilty. So point is that sometimes fighting needs to take place, and even though there might be some fault, it still needs to be done. That is the essence, actually, of this verse. So now we'll do the next verse. I'll just repeat it again. So we'll start with the word for word. So let's start with buddhi. Asakta. Asakta means unattached. Sakta means asakta, unattached. So please repeat. Asakta buddhi. Sarvatra jita atma vigata spriha naishkarmya siddhim paramam sanyasena adigachati asakta buddhi sarvatra jita atma vigata spriha naishkarmya siddhim paramam Sanyase nadi gacchati Asakta buddhi sarvatra Jitadma vigataspriya Naishkarmya siddhim paramam Sanyase nadi gacchati Asakta buddhi sarvatra Jitatma vigataspriya Naishkarmya siddhim paramam Sanyasena digachati. Asakta buddhi sarvatra. Jitatma vigatasprya. Naiskarmya siddhim parama. Sanyasena digachati. Asakta buddhi sarvatra. Jitatma vigatasprya. Naiskarmya siddhim parama. Sanyasena digachati. So now you already have a little bit more experience. maybe you want to try it now. No, I'm just joking. Anyway, thank you. So we'll read together the word for word translation. Asakta buddhihi, having unattached intelligence. Sarvatra, everywhere. Jita atma, having control of the mind. Vigata spriyaha, without material desires. Naiskarmya siddhim, the perfection of non-reaction. Paramam, supreme. Sanyasena, by the renounced order of life. Adigachati, one attains. Translation. One who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain, by practice of renunciation, the highest perfection, the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. Purport. Real renunciation means that one should always think himself part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and therefore think that he has no right to enjoy the results of his work. Since he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the results of his work must be enjoyed by the Supreme Lord. This is actually Krishna consciousness. The person acting in Krishna consciousness is really a sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life. By such a mentality, one is satisfied because he is actually acting for the Supreme. Thus he is not attached to anything material. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. A sannyasi is supposed to be free from the reactions of his past activities. But a person who is in Krishna consciousness automatically attains this perfection without even accepting the so-called order of renunciation. This state of mind is called Yoga Ruda, or the perfectional stage of yoga. As confirmed in the third chapter, Yas Tvatma Ratir Eva Syat, one who is satisfied in himself has no fear of any kind of reaction from his activity. Om Agyana Timurandasya Ganam Janas Lakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistang Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayang Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpaturubhyascha Kripasinubhyevicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhadar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Asakta Buddhi Sarvatra Jitatma Vigataspiha Naiskarmya Siddhim Paramang Sanyasena digachati. So it's good that we discussed the previous verse a little bit, because then this verse becomes more clear. This 18th chapter, by the way, is a summary of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Actually, if you look at the end of the 17th chapter, or beginning of the 18th, Prabhupada says in the purport of the first verse of the 18th chapter, actually, the Bhagavad Gita is finished in 17 chapters. The 18th chapter is a supplementary summarization of the topics discussed before. In every chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna stresses that devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. This same point is summarized in the 18th chapter as the most confidential part of knowledge. In the first six chapters, stress was given to devotional service, yogi nam api sarve sham. Of all yogis or transcendentalists, one who always thinks of me within himself is best. That's the end of the sixth chapter. Yogi nam api sarve sham. Matkatein antaratmanaha. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. He who serves me with shraddha, with full faith. Okay, I have to look it up, I'm sorry. Same yukta tamo mataha. Yeah, so the yukta uttama, the highest yogi. Yukta tamo, same yukta tamo mataha. According to me, mataha, considered by me. Same mataha yukta tama. He is the highest yoga. This is the conclusion of sixth chapter. Then, in the next six chapters, pure devotional service and its nature and activity were discussed. Then in the third six chapters, knowledge, renunciation. Perhaps you remember that in the 13th chapter, Krishna explains what knowledge is. And he explains that knowledge, the first thing Krishna says is humility. This is knowledge. To be humble. I am 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair. I am very small. God is very big. I should be humble. I'm very small. The universe is very, very big. This world is very, very big. You ever try to climb the Himalayas? You tried? No. People die trying. There's many bodies on the Himalayas. They're still there because they can't get them down. It's a big place. This world is a big place. This universe is huge. So we should be humble. This is the beginning of knowledge. Beginning of knowledge is humility. So that is knowledge. Then renunciation was explained. I forgot where that was. The activities of material nature. So that was in the 13th chapter. And then also 14th chapter. Then the three modes were explained. And transcendental nature. And devotional service were described. So this was all in the last six chapters. It was concluded that all acts should be performed in conjunction with the Supreme Lord, represented by the words Om Tat Sat, which indicates Vishnu, the Supreme Person. The third part of Bhagavad Gita, what we just described, has shown that devotional service and nothing else is the ultimate purpose of life. This has been established by citing past acharyas and the Brahma Sutra, the Vedanta Sutra. Yeah, so the Vedanta Sutra is also called the Brahma Sutra. This is the 15th chapter. I'll just show you quickly so you remember it. Because I also want to remember it myself. Yeah, it's called the Yoga of the Supreme Person. And it starts with this. Let me get the word. Urtva Mulam. Urtva means above, like they sometimes say, the higher planets. Means also this Udva, Urtva. Mulam, I think Mulam means root. Mula means root. Urtva Mulam, with the roots above. So it describes this banyan tree. And this example is from the Vedanta Sutra. It's an example. As far as I understand, it should not be taken literally. But the idea is that, like Prabhupada gives the example, the most exalted thing, which is what we have here in Radhades, is Krishna and the gopis. Krishna sporting with young girls He's the most degraded in the material world. He's very degraded. Generally, nothing good can come from that. If a man starts to go in the forest with young girls, this is very, very demoniac, actually. What God does, it is completely different. Everything God does is completely perfect. And Lord Bhishma, he is one of the Mahajans and one of the most staunchest brahmacharis in the world, because he was a king, actually, he was a prince. Actually, he wasn't a king, this was the point. He was a prince. And his stepmom said that, look, you know, you have this son, and I will not marry you because your son will take the throne. And if I marry you, I want my sons to have the throne. So then Bhishma, he made a vow. He said, I will not have any children. I will remain brahmachari for the rest of my life. This is called the horrible vow, especially for a prince, because princes generally, they're supposed to get married, to have progeny. It's a very tough vow. But he did it, and he maintained it all of his life. This is why they couldn't kill him. He could not be killed. Well, he could be killed. Of course, everybody can be killed, except for the soul and for God, for Krishna. But he could decide when he died. So he was literally riddled with arrows. It's called the bed of arrows. It was because at some stage, Bhishma Dev decided to lay down. But he had so many arrows inside his body that the arrows carried his body. Because the arrow, Arjuna shot him. You see, Arjuna is the greatest archer. So all these arrows were in his body. But he didn't die. Like Hiranyakashipu, of course this is a demon. Lord Bhishma is a pure devotee. But even he didn't die. The termites. You know, they ate his body. So only his bones were there. So it can be done by dint of Shakti and by dint of Siddhi, by perfectional yoga. So by his brahmachari power, Tejas means power, he could decide when he left his body. So he was riddled with arrows and he didn't fall down, he decided to lay down, and then he was laying on these arrows. The arrows were stuck into the ground and he was floating on the ground. And he said, Bhishma said, that Lord Krishna is a better brahmachari than me. Because he was in the forest with all these young girls and he left them. So this is the topmost renunciation. So Krishna is like that. He is the most lusty and he's the most renounced. And everything he does is completely perfect. So that is God. And so that is the example of this Urdhva Mulam. The roots are upward. So the most exalted in the spiritual world is the most degraded in the material world. And this chapter is as far as I understand, from Prabhupada's purports, because you cannot really understand these chapters without Prabhupada's purports. This is a summary, 15th chapter, of the Vedanta Sutra. And then the 16th chapter is the divine and demonic nature. It tells about how a demon thinks. Aham bhogi, aham yogi, I am the greatest enjoyer, I am the greatest, I forgot exactly how it was, but you get like an inside look how the demons think. And then the 17th chapter is the conclusion, the divisions of fate, and now here we have this 18th chapter, which we're just summarizing. I just wanted to impress upon you the Brahma Sutra, 15th chapter, Urdhva Mulam, you remember this. Certain impersonalists consider themselves to have a monopoly on the knowledge of Vedanta Sutra. But actually the Vedanta Sutra is meant for understanding devotional service. For the Lord himself is the composer of the Vedanta Sutra and he is its knower. That is described in the 15th chapter. In every scripture, every Veda, devotional service is the objective. That is explained in Bhagavad Gita. And I should also read this, because it's interesting. As in the second chapter, a synopsis of the whole subject matter was described, in the 18th chapter also the summary of all instructions is given. The purpose of life is indicated to be renunciation and attainment of the transcendental position above the three material modes of nature. Yeah, so the three modes of material nature is described in the 14th chapter, and also it's very much spoken about in this 18th chapter. Like it's spoken about Kshatriyas, about Brahmanas, about Vaishyas. You know, it's very much spoken, these three modes. It's very important that we understand this. Very, very important. Because we have to rise above it. It's possible to do it automatically, but generally it doesn't work like that. You know, do you know anything that goes automatic? Even a car, you have to put in the key, no? I mean, basically nothing goes automatically. So you will have to have some knowledge, generally. And this knowledge about the three modes, I would say it's essential. Essential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Because we have to rise above it, that is what Prabhupada says here. Arjuna wants to clarify the two distinct subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, namely renunciation and the renounced order of life. Thus he is asking the meaning of these two words. So he's asking about chak and about sannyas. So that we're discussing today. We're discussing about sannyas. One who is self-controlled and unattached. Self-controlled means, for instance, in the Nectar of Instruction by Rupa Goswami, he said, one who can control the urge of speech, the urge of the belly and of the genitals, and of the mind, and of anger, he can accept disciples. So speech must be controlled, should speak only about Krishna. Belly must be controlled, should only eat Krishna Prasadam. And the genitals must be controlled, should either not be used at all, just remain brahmachari, or should be used in Krishna's service by doing this garbhadan sangskar, means chant 15 rounds before sexual intercourse, and then making children for Krishna, creating children that are Krishna conscious. This is using the genitals in Krishna's service. But Prabhupada says better not to use them at all. It's a better policy. Like Bhishma. You can become like Bhishma. Not completely, because this was Dwarpa Yuga. But everybody knows that brahmacharis, generally, I'm not such a good example, but generally they can work very, very hard. They have so much energy. Just because this is underrated knowledge, because they maintain their semen. So, this is Tejas, is also called Tejas. So you maintain the Tejas, you get more Tejas. So this is self-controlled and unattached. So we should not be attached. Of course we should be attached to Krishna, but we should not be too attached to certain things. We can get attached to anything. Like I sometimes think by myself that I get attached to anything except for Krishna. Like they say, if you put water on a swan, then water goes off. So sometimes I feel like that with me and Krishna. But anything else, I get attached to it. We can get attached to the most strange things, you know, like old kurta or a watch. So we should be unattached to these things. We should realize it's for Krishna. This is Krishna's watch. We should think like that. It's not so easy, but we should think like that. And who disregards all material enjoyments. So today we had Sunday feast. Of course, this is, in one sense, it's not material, because it's prasada. But at the same time, there is an open secret. Maybe it's not an open secret, but I will tell it to you anyway. Is that this movement actually is to stop eating completely. To stop eating, to stop sleeping, to stop sex, and to stop defending. So ultimately, eating, any of the acharyas, Lord Jesus, Muhammad was eating one date every day. So all the acharyas, they basically did not eat. Even Napoleon, he's not an acharya, he's a big general. He didn't sleep, practically. He said he just slept. You're from France, you should know. He slept on his horse. So if you want to establish something big, and in one sense he did establish something big, even in Holland, the laws are generally based on Napoleon law. It's based on the Bible, but Napoleon, he institutionalized it. So he did many things, built many roads. So you need intelligence, but you also need to work hard. And to work hard, you shouldn't be lazy. And if you don't, if you're not lazy, then you don't sleep. So like that. So this means being unattached to material enjoyment, because sleeping is considered a material enjoyment. Like a businessman, they work very hard, but then when they sleep 12 hours, they're like, oh, I slept, it's very nice. Not all of them. Or sometimes they might not admit it, but generally they think like that. And by practice of renunciation, so we have to practice renunciation. Like we get up every day at 4, or we try. So we renounce our sleep. So I've been trying to do this for almost 60 years, and it gets easier. Because you just train yourself. You renounce. You just renounce the sleep more and more. It becomes easier. Of course, renouncing sleep is very difficult. What you do is you start to chant more better, as they say in India. You start to chant more attentively, more concentrating, more concentrated, with better concentration. And then you need less sleep. You become Krishnaized, Prabhupada says. Krishnaized. The mantra is not different from Krishna. You chant this mantra, you associate with Krishna, you become spiritualized. And you can feel this physically. The mantra, it goes through your body. Of course, it's transcendental. So you can, Haridas Thakur was chanting it sometimes in his mind. But I can also personally attest that the vibration, it actually purifies the body. It's very powerful. It's very, very powerful. So that is renunciation. You have to practice. And it's also difficult, actually, because when you chant, you renounce so many other things. To walk around, to read something, to whatever. You renounce it when you're chanting. The highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. So many reactions. Prabhupada says, if you borrow somebody some money, then if he doesn't give it back, then next life you have to come back, and that person, you have to wait for that person to give you back the money. This is karma. So even good things, you have to get the reaction. So, should be, as Prabhupada, or Krishna, Prabhupada translates, freedom from reaction. He doesn't say bad reaction, freedom from reaction, any action, karma. Karma generally is considered good, but, you know, because karma means good work, but still, we should become transcendental. Transcend. Real renunciation means that one should always think himself part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and therefore think that he has no right to enjoy the results of his work. So I explained it already in the previous verse. Remember? That we have to renounce work because we don't owe anything. We are part and parcel of God and we have no right. Prabhupada is very powerful, very... He's almost like a lawyer or like a judge. Because actually, he's more like a judge. We are actually lawyers. At least if I speak for myself. I'm like a... Because generally in America, lawyers are considered very low. They're considered like liars. Cheaters. And huh? Yes. So I'm a little bit, I have that mentality, I try to find some loophole. The lawyers always find a loophole in the law and then they get their client free. So we are also a little bit like that, at least if I speak for myself. I try to find the loophole. But Prabhupada, he writes it in such a way for us so that we cannot find the loophole. He makes it clear. He says, we have no right to enjoy the results of his work, of our work. Since he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the results of his work must be enjoyed by the Supreme Lord. This is actually Krishna consciousness. It's simple for the simple, and difficult for the complicated person. Difficult for the insincere person. The person acting in Krishna consciousness is really a sannyasi, one in the renounced order of life. By such mentality, one is satisfied because he is actually acting for the Supreme. Thus he's not attached to anything material. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. Yeah, so Prabhupada is very merciful here. He's saying he becomes accustomed. It takes some time. He becomes accustomed. He becomes used to a custom, it's a custom in France to eat at 12 o'clock, right? So it's a custom to renounce material enjoyment. You see, we should become accustomed to that. But it takes time. He becomes accustomed to not taking pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. So Prabhupada, he's very genius. He speaks from the positive. He doesn't speak from the negative, that he becomes accustomed to renounce material enjoyment. He doesn't say that. He says he becomes accustomed to not take pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. So in one sense he's negative, because there is some pleasure in material enjoyment, but it's temporary. And it's not real pleasure. Because I used to dance in Amsterdam, like in a club. Now they call it a club, then they used to call it a disco. And then, of course, first of all, the lights went on at 4:30, you know, Mongolartic time, 5 o'clock. Then everything, party was spoiled. But one thing that always nagged me personally was that so many people, especially in Africa, they were suffering. And we were enjoying, or trying to enjoy. So this is not real enjoyment, you know. If somebody is suffering, then how you can enjoy? But the thing is, the suffering is taking place thousands of miles away, so you don't see it. But if somebody is suffering in front of you, then people say, stop dancing. Somebody is bleeding here. Please stop. Are you crazy? Right? But because it's thousands of miles away, nobody says nothing. But it's the same thing. But the devotee, like Prahlad Maharaj, he's para dukkha dukkhi. When he sees someone suffering, he feels also suffering. So the devotee is always working for the benefit of everyone. And therefore, in one sense, he's not suffering, because he's already doing his best to relieve everyone from suffering. It's like when somebody's standing under the shower, you shouldn't tell him that you're dirty, because he's washing it. It will be washed. He's got the soap in his hand. It's just a matter of time. So similarly, the devotee, he is preaching. And it's just a matter of time before the whole world or the whole universe is released. Of course, it's also up to the people themselves. If somebody is suffering, or let's say somebody is sleeping, and the house is burning, and you're trying to wake that person up, but he is not waking because he just wants to keep sleeping. He's actually awake, but he just doesn't want to listen to you. Then you cannot wake that person. So then what can you do? Especially when that is like a 120 kilo person. You cannot drag him out, you see. So you just have to leave him and save the innocent persons that are also in the house. You see? So similarly, if a person doesn't want to be convinced, then you cannot. You have to talk to the next person. Like if you distribute books, sometimes you have persons and they keep talking and just wasting your time. And so many innocent people, they walk past you and they actually do want the book. So you have to be intelligent. You shouldn't be like a crazy fireman and drag a 120 kilo big man that is pretending to be asleep. Doesn't work. You better save the girl on the next floor who is crying, you know? So anyway, I should wrap it up now. But the point is that we cannot really enjoy. That was my point, because so many people are suffering, and if you become a devotee, then as far as I'm concerned, of course you have to be 100% devotee, 100% engaged. Then you will feel the benefit. Then you won't feel so much this guilt from that people are suffering. You feel it still a little bit, but you're doing your best to relieve them. Like if we make Europe Krishna conscious, or America, or both, then automatically the problems in Africa, they will be solved. They will be solved. So we're doing our best. We're doing the best we can. Of course, we can always do better, right? We can always do better. But for now, we're doing what we can, and we try to do our best every day, more, increase, like that. So, and then when we more and more realize that, we can realize that that we don't want to take pleasure in anything beyond the transcendental happiness derived from the service of the Lord. A sannyasi is supposed to be free from the reactions of his past activities. But a person who is in Krishna consciousness automatically attains this perfection without even accepting the so-called order of renunciation. This state of mind is called Yoga Ruda, or the perfectional states of yoga. Yeah, so a person in Krishna consciousness, because you have sannyasis also in the Mayavadis, and they're very renounced, they're very elevated actually. They're all very staunch brahmacharis, and they get up early, they take only cold baths, they generally eat once a day, very renounced. But the person in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, he can attain this perfection without accepting the so-called order, even though they are so-called married. They can also have this state of sannyas. And then Prabhupada quotes the third chapter, Yastvatma ratir eva syat. One who is satisfied in himself has no fear of any kind of reaction from his activities. Anybody knows where this verse is from? It's 3:17. So I'll just read it and then I'll end. We were lucky because it was the first line he was quoting. If he quotes the second line, then sometimes it's difficult to find it. Yastvatma ratireva syat atma triptas chamanavaha atmanyeva sa santustas tasha karyam navityate. For one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, atmani eva santushas, santustas, we have this devotee here, santusha. So santusha means peaceful, perfectly satisfied here, santustaha. For them there is no duty, tasha karyam na vijate, na karyam, no duty. He doesn't have material duty. Of course, you have to be very elevated, and and a devotee can engage anything in the service of the Lord. But yeah, it's a difficult point, at least for me personally, because Rupa Goswami also says that ordinary things shouldn't be neglected, ordinary things like family and stuff. But at least we can. No, it should not be neglected. Like when your mother is her birthday, you should call her. Happy birthday, mom. It's like preaching. It's not only preaching, it's actually your duty. But it's because it's your duty, it's preaching. Because actually, you have no duty. You see, you actually don't have to call her because you're with Krishna. But as a matter of preaching, we call her. Because it is materially, actually is our duty. At the same time, I explained already, if you're not fully pure, then this does, Krishna says, yayatamam prapachyante tangsateva bhajami aham. As you surrender unto me, this is how I will reciprocate. So if you're fully surrendered, then you don't have to do these duties. But if you're not fully surrendered, then you might get in trouble. And you might still be attached also to your family because you're not fully surrendered yet. So then it's like a false renunciation. And then, let's say, you never call your mother and then she dies and then suddenly you get a depression because you think like, oh my God, I never called her. What did I do? I must have been crazy. Because you weren't on that Krishna consciousness level that you realize this is actually not my mother. You know? But it's a difficult point. And it should not be taken theoretically. You can take it theoretically as, oh, this is the philosophy, but we're talking practical matters about family. We should not just blindly, you know, take the verse, the theory, and apply it in the practical thing. It should come from the heart. Because actually what will happen, you'll see, like I can also admit to you, I will go with my mother and my brother to France for some days because my father left, and you know, it's like family thing, and you go to see a family in France and they're old friends, and somebody's also very old there, so probably the last time I can see that person. The point is that it should not be done artificially, you know. This renunciation should be done gradually. And what will happen is that at some stage, if you're serious, then you will just have so much service that your family will understand that he cannot come. He has a whole festival to manage. You can tell, I'm sorry, Mom, but this festival, it was already for months we were doing it, and so many people depend on me. I'm sorry, I cannot come. And they'll say, no, no, we understand. And of course, it's on television, and you know, I don't know. But you know. Or I can give so many other examples. You can use your imagination. It's nothing wrong with dreaming. No, Krishna consciousness dreaming. You can use your imagination. But like that, it will become natural. You can imagine it, but that's imagine. But some stage, if you stick to this movement, you know, then you will have responsibility if you remain serious, and then automatically these other things will become less important. It's not rocket science, so you don't have to artificially, you know, start not calling, or you know, that please don't do that. So for one who takes pleasure in the self, so there you go, who takes pleasure in the self, huh? I mean, this is a high order, tall order, as they say in America, whose human life is one of self-realization. So who can honestly say that? Who can go to Radha Gopinath and say, you know, my human life is one of self-realization? I mean, really, you know, be honest. And who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated. For him, there is no duty. So, you know. Be honest when we try to apply this verse. And Prabhupada, actually, if you look at the purport, it's printed in a special way, the word fully, to make it. It said a person who is fully Krishna consciousness. It's printed like that to stress it. It has to be fully. Italics, yes. And is fully satisfied by his act in Krishna consciousness, no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety, which is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated. So then his duty becomes self-illuminated. He knows exactly what to do. Even Srila Prabhupada, who generally we consider as a pure devotee, it seemed, it's like, generally we call it like a lila, that his duty wasn't clear. He said it himself. You know, that my Guru Maharaj said I should distribute this knowledge in the English language, but it wasn't completely clear. I mean, I was meditating on it, but I didn't know how to do it. I was thinking I have to become rich. And then, you know, I'll preach with my money, but then Krishna, he failed his business, you know, crushed his business. And he had to fully surrender, he had to go to Vrindavan, take Vanaprasa, then take Sannyas. And then his duty became self-illuminated. Suddenly it became clear he had to go to America. He did. And he became completely successful. By the grace of the Lord, says here. By the grace of Rupa Goswami, by the grace of the Acharyas, Yasha Prashadat, Bhagavat Prashanam. He was there in Radha Damodar. This is where Rupa Goswami Samadhi is. You ever been in Vrindavan? You've been in Vrindavan, Aryan? No? Oh, I have to go there. Must go there. Yeah, it's very important. Next year. Very, very good. So then you have to go to Radha Dhammadhar temple. It's near Loy Bazaar. Everybody knows Loy Bazaar. It's a small temple. It looks a little bit run down. And there is one room also, still I think still maintained by ISKCON devotees, that used to be Prabhupada's room. And Gaudiya Math allows us, they're renting the room to us. They're allowing us to maintain that room. They're very kind actually. And on the courtyard, there is Rupa Goswami's Samadhi and this Bhajan Kutir, where he used to write all these books. Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and so many more, whole library. So from his room, Prabhupada was looking on that Samadhi. So he, Yasya Prasad Bhagavata Prasad, he got the mercy of Rupa Goswami, and then he got the mercy of Krishna. By the grace of the Lord, and therefore, he no longer has any obligation to the Vedic injunctions. So, like I said, Vedic injunction is to honor your father and your mother and your elder brother. You have to honor them. It's a Vedic injunction. Such a Krishna conscious person is no longer interested in material activities and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. So who can say that, you know? You, like for instance, and I don't want to tempt you, but you go to Croatia and I throw a whole big party and I say, Arjun, I mean, I'm your friend. No, I will not tell anybody. But can you resist it? It's going to be tough, you know. Like I'm a devotee, you know me. I'm a friend. I said, no, it's okay. It's for just for one day. You know, I will. It's going to be tough. We're going to be tempted. But this person, he doesn't take any pleasure in wine and woman. He will not be tempted even. He'll say, look, you know, I'm reading Bhagavad Gita. You have your party. Just give me a room where it's quiet. I want to read. You know. But this is very, very high level. This is Ramananda Roy. He was on that level. He was dressing young girls for a dance and he wasn't agitated at all. This is the highest level. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he revealed his innermost secrets, his innermost feelings to Ramananda Roy. His highest philosophy he discussed with Ramananda Roy. Okay, so that is the real sannyas, this mood. This is the real sannyas. Doesn't matter what clothes you wear. So any questions or comments? Right. Okay, yeah, you can sing. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, this is a question that is many, many times asked. Bhishma was in the chivalry mood. Chivalry means, and he wanted to fight with Krishna. Or you could even say he wanted to give pleasure to Krishna by fighting with him. Because he's a pure devotee, it's not that I want to fight with Krishna. No, different folks, different strokes. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. So Krishna, sometimes he likes to fight, sometimes he likes to have a friendship. It's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the arrows of Lord Bhishma that struck Krishna, because he was actually shot and it was bleeding. It was like pleasure, like I think the example is given like flowers thrown to an elephant. This is how Krishna felt these arrows. He was very ecstatic. So that is the short answer. Can elaborate very much on it. And one other thing also, which you should take into consideration with these kind of questions. Bhakti Charamana has explained it in the seminar. He said you have to understand that the Mahabharata is generally Dharma Shastra. So these kind of questions are generally concerned with Dharma. You see, but we generally don't concern us so much about these things. But I'm giving you more the internal idea. Yeah. No, no, but I'm saying it is a lower kind of scripture, although this Parashatam is described in the Bhagavatam. So that's why we generally we discuss it, because Bhishma is one of the Mahajans. But more important is, you know, Bhishma's instructions to King Yudhisthira, because there he explains about how you should rule a kingdom, and these are all very they call it esoteric. You know, this is very high knowledge, because it's about the inner feelings of Krishna and the inner feelings of Bhishma. This is very elevated topics, and it's nice to discuss, but you know, we should be discussing how can we get out of here. You know, how can we stop birth and death? Huh? Yeah, but it's a valid question though. But did I answer it? Anything more? Okay. I think I read that. Yeah, it's in Bhagavatam. Right. No, it's a war. I mean, he plays like an ordinary prince. So princes, and it's described also that it made him more beautiful, you know, like blood and sweat. He looked even more beautiful. Now, this is one reason that has been given, but the general reason is because we're actually, you know, we were with Krishna, but we became obstinate, and we're like criminals. You know, we left the association of Lord Krishna. I don't know why we did it. Temporary loss of intelligence, but we did it. Yeah, we're responsible for leaving his association, and this is a prison. It's called Durga. But it's such an expert prison that you think like, oh, it's pretty nice here. But this is Krishna, because he wants us to voluntarily return. Yeah, we insisted. Yeah. So that is. Yeah, we insisted, and therefore Krishna had to create this material world. So that is generally the reason. It's like a prison. Like the government doesn't want to build a prison, but it's necessary for the criminals. You see? So that is the main reason. And then the other things are generally not so much given as reasons for the cause of the material world, but more for the reason why Krishna comes down. One of the reasons why he comes down is to fight with the demons. Because, like you said, there's no demons in the spiritual world, so it's more generally given as a reason why he comes down, not so much as a reason for the existence of the material world. But it's a very big topic, because you're talking about Krishna, what's in his heart. So who knows? Yeah, it could be true. I don't know. But I'm just giving you what the acharyas are giving. So generally, we should just stick with that, especially when we preach. You know. Yeah. No, it's nice. I appreciate it. But we have to be careful. Okay, we'll stop there. So, thank you very much. Marcus, no? I don't know, she's actually in charge, because officially it's another program, no? Bhajan. So you have to talk with her.
I come to any instrument.